Okay, it's my pleasure to call to order this meeting of the House Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development. It's February 4th. We are here for our first meeting. It is later than most of the meetings will be. We'll start at 8, and I'm happy to see you all here, and I hope you'll return when it's at 8. Somebody said to me the other day that an 8 o'clock class is tough, but when the professors are good, it's worth coming. And this is a stellar lineup, as you'll see. Through an oddity in the House rules, we can't do formal business today because officially the legislature doesn't come back into session until 11 o'clock. So normally what we would do at the beginning of a meeting like this, the very first one of the session, is we would adopt rules for the committee. So today we're going to proceed in a lawless fashion. Okay? I am counting on my colleagues, though, to behave and to follow some kind of rule.
You're asking a lot.
It can be the rule, whatever rule you personally believe in, that's fine. And that also means that we won't be introducing committee bills. We'll start that process on Wednesday. So colleagues, if any of you have bills that you would like to see introduced as committee bills, get them to me or to Victoria, and we'll get them, get the process going. What we are going to do today is we're going to I'd like to ask each of the committee members to introduce himself and to say something about their interest in the fields of higher education or workforce development. And then I'll give just a quick overview of some of the issues that I know that are out there this session that we're going to work on. Call on you to add any that you that you'd like to see us be considering. Starting tomorrow, I'll be meeting on a weekly basis, or on a regular basis anyway, with the two vice chairs, Rep. Harker and Rep. Huffman, and we'll be working on the ongoing agenda. We have our agenda set in a provisional manner for the first 2 weeks of the session. So, why don't we start off, Rep. Gallegos, could you start us off?
Sure. Do I need this?
Sorry.
Joe Gallegos. I'm the pleased to be on this committee, Higher Education and Workforce Development. I just retired about a year ago from University of Portland after 26 years at UP, plus another 20 years at various universities. So higher education is something that is in my blood, that I've lived for half a century almost. So I'm very keen on higher ed. Workforce development, I think, really just sort of spills out of higher education for me. It has to do with how do we get folks through higher education. And for me, higher education is not just four-year universities, but also community colleges, apprenticeship programs, and so on. So how do we begin to think about the kind of workforce we need, not just right now, but also in the future, in the next 25 years? So those are the kinds of that's the kind of thinking I'll be hopefully adding to this committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems a little odd not to be your co-pilot, but nevertheless, we're thankful we're here for the flight and looking forward to a good I think my priorities for all of public education, I would hope, for this legislature is try to provide not just universities and community colleges, but all entities within public education, the tools that they need to be able to use the resources that they have as efficiently as possible. I think I specifically, the issue of governance is something that we're going to have to take a very good look at. We made some progress last session, but I don't think we've clarified things. In fact, I think we've muddied the waters a bit more than they were when we began in 2011, so we certainly have some work to do there, and I think our higher ed world is looking forward to that. I think a specific pet peeve would be, I think it's time for a course-numbered system in Oregon. And I hope we can take that one on, Mr. Chair. So, thank you.
It's on my list.
Of course, I always had a number.
Yeah, we need some alignment. They mean the same things in every university.
Oh, yeah. So it's going along. I'm Mitch Greenlick. I represent House District 33, which starts at the river on the northwest side and goes out to essentially the Rock Creek campus of Portland Community College, which is a stone's throw northwest corner of my district. For about 30 years, I was director of research for Kaiser Permanente. And during that whole time, I was an adjunct faculty member both at Portland State and at Oregon Health Sciences University. And for the last 10 years of my active academic career, I was chair of the Department of Preventive Medicine and Public Health at the medical school at OHSU. Consequently, my particular interest is the future of, and perhaps the joint future of, Portland State and Oregon Health Sciences University, because that jointness has been in my blood also for about 50 years. And I think it's important that we help steer that future in the right way. The other thing I'm extraordinarily worried about is the amount of financial support we give to our higher education system. We've now reached a point where our prison budget exceeds our higher ed budget, and that means we'll be putting more effort into keeping people in prison than educating them. And if we really take seriously, as I'm not sure I do, the 40-40-20 concept, we need to start supporting our higher ed system in a completely different way.
I'm John Huffman, and I base out of the Dalles, and I cover House District 59, which is all of northern Deschutes County up north to the Columbia River. And it's great to be here. I look forward to continuing the work that Representative Denbrough and Representative Johnson worked on extensively the last year and a half or so. And there's going to be some interesting developments come out of that work. I've been on the Education Committee the last 5.5 years. I've been a member of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board for how long, Cam? About that long, probably, something like that. Representative Denbrough and I actually did some workforce development work in the 2009 session. There was another workforce committee, and we had the career readiness certificate that came out of that work. And I've got several things that I'm working on in the background that will probably initially make some folks nervous, but hopefully that will settle in and people will understand the direction that I'm I'm headed for in making sure that Oregon students are getting what they sign up for and they have a clear understanding of what their goals are in education, and they're getting the value for their dollar invested or value for the dollar that they're taking on in the form of student loans. And so it's going to be one of my passions and directions that I'm going to be working with Representative Denbrough on to figure out where we can take those discussions. Good to be here.
Thank you, Rep. Representative Gorsuch.
Hi, everybody. Good morning. I have a lot of background in higher ed. I've also done other things in the past in law enforcement and retail, but I've been a teacher at Mount Hood Community College since about 96, and from about that same time I've been an adjunct instructor at Portland State University. So I've seen it both from the community college and also the university side. I also did some adjunct work at University of Portland, so that was a fun opportunity as well. Definitely, as Representative Huffman was talking about, cost is an important thing that we need to consider, and also the governance issues that Representative Johnson brought up. So I'm interested in really all of those aspects. Most of the time I've been an instructor, I do have a little bit of past experience as a department chair and also a short time as a dean in social science. So hopefully I have some insights that will be able to add to the already wonderful folks that are on the committee. So, well, thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'm Gene Wisnett, House District 53, which also includes Northern Deschutes County, Mr. Huffman. I live in Sun River, so why am I here? I spent my first 7 years in this building in education, vice chair of Mr. Buckley and also Betty Comp. I have no academic experience other than graduating from a couple of universities. I'm a taxpayer. We have the greatest community college in the state of Oregon, in a unique situation, and we partner with OSU Cascade. So I hope to be bringing that experience back to this committee. I served as a commissioner to the Education Commission of the States, and we've attended several annual meetings. So I think I have a good background. It's always about money. We have a situation where the formula doesn't help my community college at all in Central Oregon. I don't know if you've talked about that. When I served on education, with a lot of the people at this up here this morning, that we've done some good things in community college of, you know, being sure your transferability to the university system. You know, a lot of work with the transitioning from high school, being sure that those things transfer. I look forward to working. Those will be some of my objectives, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vic Gilliam from Silverton. I represent District 18, Silverton, Molalla, and several other communities. And it's rather intimidating to be on this panel when I see all the experience in higher education that's been mentioned so far, particularly you, Mr. Chair, because this is your field. But I'm pleased to be here. I would say that I've been on probably almost every campus in Oregon and a number of prestigious institutions all over the country, many times for over an hour before security was called. I was in the fundraising business for a long time and worked both at OHSU, where my friend Mitch Greenlich also hung his hat. And so I've been on another side of higher ed. I've also been in the fundraising department here at Willamette University in the past. So I have a little perspective there, maybe that I hope will be helpful from time to time. But I'd have to say that the most interesting thing about the committee so far to me has been, excuse me, reading the linkage that the chair is putting on between not just higher ed, but workforce development. So I appreciate that very much. I hope that we don't spend too much academic-oriented time reorganizing everything, which is important, and that we get down to the business of really trying to help our students wherever they are. And I know that's a commitment of the chair and also your former co-chair, Governor Kitzhaber, Mark Johnson. So, Mr. Chair, thank you for this chance to get started.
Thank you, Rick Gilliam, and I very much appreciate your humility and but also your dedication. Those of you in the audience and certainly on TV perhaps can't see that Representative Gilliam is in the process of growing a beard to really step up to being a full member of this committee.
Thank you.
So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Brett Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I am Chris Harker. I'm the representative from District 34, which is Beaverton and Cedar Mill, all in Washington County, adjacent to 33, which is Representative Greenlich's district. This is actually an interesting little process of reintroducing ourselves. And in terms of the foci that I have for what we're going to try to get done here, I think most of it has already been said. I want to just say a little bit more about what motivates me, though, which is I am one of the first generation college people. My dad got a 2-year associate's degree. My mom graduated from high school. My grandparents made it through 8th grade. And so I'm the first one to go all the way through college, let alone get a PhD in my family. And I see the opportunities that brought me and that brings to the students who are strongly represented in this community. My first semester tuition at University of Michigan was $400 as an in-state person. I was able to do it because that was a quite affordable amount back then, and I'm very attuned to the really crisis stage levels of debt that people are taking on right now to get an education. The education is still valuable. It will change your lives. It will open doors that couldn't possibly be opened otherwise. And some of those are to businesses. I'm a strong proponent of education for education's sake, but having come out of OHSU faculty to run an IT business that supported other scientists and university campuses for nearly 20 years, I have a great appreciation for what an education can do for the economy and the economic outlook of individuals, families, and communities. So I'm very happy to be here working with you all on this. And maybe you have some words to say, sir.
Thank you. I'm Michael Dembro. I represent House District 45. That's Northeast Portland out to Park Rose. And I have been a member of the Portland Community College faculty for the last 30-something years. And it has been a connection that has meant a lot to me. I can proudly say that I've helped transform the lives of thousands of people. And, you know, that's good. People who were headed one way in their lives and wanted to make a change, and they were able to do that. And that is what education is all about. And it instilled in me a fervor to make a difference. And that is ultimately what led me to join the State Board of Education. I was the first community college faculty representative on that board, and then ultimately to run for office. I also, partly due to my experience at the community college, I've become a passionate supporter in workforce development and career technical education. As Rep Huffman said, I joined him as a member of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. This state is full of good people on many campuses doing good work, people in different agencies all committed and doing good work. But at some points, to some extent, they're working at cross purposes, and our goal is to shed the light on what needs to be done and to have people working better together, and that is the goal that we're going to be seeking in this committee this session. Just based on the opening comments that I've heard from the committee members, I think we're all on the same page in the fundamental goals of what we need to achieve. Last session, which was the first one where we had a higher ed subcommittee and then full committee, Rep Johnson and I think, devoted ourselves to the goal of pursuing that dream of 40-40-20. And 40-40-20 really is just a metaphor, right? It's a metaphor for increasing to the fullest amount possible the affordability of post-secondary education, access for all Oregonians to post-secondary education, and success, so that students who have decided that they want to pursue post-secondary don't find themselves coming up against roadblocks and bureaucratic kinds of obstacles that keep them from being successful. So as I see it, and just sketching out the work that we need to do this session and also looking at the bills that have been submitted so far, I see that most of our work is going to revolve around and trying to enhance affordability, access, and success. And then in pursuit of those goals, making whatever governance changes are needed to move us into a better place to be able to do those things. Governance changes cannot be just moving the deck chairs. Certainly on the Titanic that many of us feel our education funding system anyway is. But rather, it has to be a way to enhance partnerships, enhance success, and create real improvements on our campuses. So among those issues related to access and affordability, obviously the one of the big goals is trying to figure out how to increase the funding for our higher education. That's not the job of this committee. That's the job of other committees. But it obviously is something that we, will have to go on this session in this legislature. But there are various things that we can do and that we can look at as a committee to close that opportunity gap that is created by the growing expense of higher education. One of the issues that was held over from last session is the issue of tuition equity, and that's something that we'll be taking up again in that effort to close the opportunity gap and to make college affordable or more affordable for all of our high school graduates here in Oregon. And we'll be taking up that issue next week, in week two of the session. We are going to be hearing from Treasurer Ted Wheeler about a proposal that he has, a very innovative way of using the state's bonding capacity that he's calling the Opportunity Initiative. He's coming in this Friday to talk to us about it, and we'll be looking at it and a couple of other bills related to affordability. There's one having to do with 529 plans, investments in that parents can take out to fund their future college tuition, and there's a tax credit proposal. We'll be looking at those on Friday. Eventually, we'll be looking at a plan called Pay It Forward, which has come out of it's come out of a group of students at Portland State University, which is similar to what the treasurer is talking about, using the state's bonding capacity. In that case, it's more of a loan type program. You'll hear about that. It's a very exciting proposal that they have. We're going to be looking at, it was mentioned that one of the big challenges that we face is the burdensome level of debt that students are taking on in our colleges and universities. Right now, the average student debt load for Oregon University students is around $24,000 to $25,000, which is a lot of money. Certainly compared to what Rep. Harker and I had to do back when we were in college, where we could just work during the summer and that basically paid for a year of college. $25,000 is a lot, but you also have to realize that a lot of students are taking don't have to take much debt. Maybe they have no debt. And so that means to get to the average of $25,000, think of the debt loads that many of our students have. So there are proposals out there. Rep. Johnson has one. I have one to enhance transparency around borrowing, so students have a better sense of what it is that they're getting themselves into as they're making their choices of the institutions to attend. We are going to be looking at oversight of for-profit colleges and universities in the state, just to make sure that we are that we're shedding the spotlight on some of the bad actors, while at the same time showcasing those that are doing the right thing. Some work that we did back in 2011 that kind of didn't go anywhere because of some problems that we had with the Education Committee 2 years ago, some of you may remember. Anyway, we'll come back to that. We'll be looking at various ways to improve the transfer process here in Oregon, transferring from community college to university, from university to university. We'll be looking at ways to enhance dual credit in high school so that students can enter the college or university system with credits under their belt, which ultimately will make it more affordable for them because they've already acquired those credits. We'll also be continuing to try to understand the cost drivers that are that are driving up tuition for students here in this state. I should say, if you don't know, that if you look at the cost per student in our colleges and universities on a per student basis adjusted for inflation, they've remained fairly steady over the last 20 years. And yet tuition has had to go up dramatically. And we are going to try to understand why that is. A lot of it obviously has to do with the reduction in state investment, right? As the state investment goes down, the burden is shifted onto the backs of students.
We've seen the enemy that is us.
Yes, it's true. We've seen the enemy, and the enemy is we. We'll be looking at various, some of those obstacles that I mentioned to student success. One of the areas that we're having the most difficulty with is success rates in our remedial students. Students in developmental education who come to us. Some of them are coming out of high school. Many of them are coming back from the workforce, lacking basic skills, and they are the hardest to bring to success. You know, for 40-40-20, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit out there, and we've started working on that and are starting to have some success. But students that require a lot of remediation are going to, that's where our jobs are going to be the hardest. So we're going to be hearing some suggestions for how to improve the way that remedial education is being done around the country and then specifically here in Oregon. Other things that we'll be looking at with respect to enhancing success will be, as I mentioned, making the transfer process smoother. One of the things that some of us are interested in there was mentioned by Rep. Johnson, having more common course numbering having a more coordinated system of course numbering. Or at least for our lower division courses, so that students don't get lost in, is this a 3-credit class, is this a 4-credit class, we want to make the transfer process as easy as possible. Back in 2011, we authorized some task forces on some very important issues, and we're going to be hearing the reports back from those task forces along with recommendations for next steps. I'm thinking specifically of the task force on textbook affordability. There's a task force on student success. There was one on the use of prior learning assessments. There was some work done on enhancing success for veterans. We'll be getting an update on the success of legislation, a program that we created back in 2011 called the Foster Youth Promise, which creates a process of tuition waivers for all former foster youth, which just rolled out this year. I want to see just how successful it is. We'll be hearing a report from the university system on what's going on with the hiring of coaches at their universities how successful the legislation that we passed back in 2009 with respect to the interviewing of qualified minority candidates, how that's going. We'll be hearing reports on online education and efforts to do a better job of coordinating online education in the state. We'll be looking at higher ed workforce. Where are the colleges and universities going in terms of numbers of faculty, full-time, part-time, non-teaching staff, administrative staff? What have been the trends in that direction? We will be talking about CTE, career technical education, and STEM, or some people are calling it STEAM. STEM is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And the effort to get more Oregon graduates to graduate in the engineering or related fields. We'll have some bills coming our way related to apprenticeships and enhancing apprenticeships in this state. We'll be hearing about a workforce program that appears to be very successful, and the governor is recommending that we enhance it, called Back to Work Oregon, which is an on-the-job training kind of program that has had a lot of success in getting unemployed, dislocated workers back into the workforce. And related to that, Rep. Huffman mentioned the career readiness certificate. That, too, is a piece of this. You'll be hearing a lot more about that. We will be looking at better ways to enhance partnerships between our schools of education and K-12 districts in order to see our schools of education not only as turning out first-rate teachers, but also supporting all these efforts through their research and through their teaching of what we're trying to do as a state. And finally, we'll be looking at the relationship between Portland State University and Oregon Health Sciences University, how to enhance that relationship so that, you know, students at PSU as undergrads can get the benefit of not just the exercise of walking up the hill, but actually doing some work up there. Okay. And then, of course, there are the governance issues. And just, you know, quickly, there are two major areas that we're going to be focusing on here. One, and they're both really continuing the work that we started last year with House Bill 4061, which had as our goal examining the question of local university boards within the university system, and then also consolidating boards at the state level. We're going to be working on both those areas this time. The Joint Committee on University Governance made some recommendations, created a sort of framework document for local boards. It's a framework. It's only, I don't know what it is, 150 pages now. We know we can make it longer. No, really, it's just the first 20 pages that are really key. But, you know, what we were trying to do in that joint committee was see, you know, is there value, can there be value in universities having their own boards while at the same time maintaining the integrity of an articulated, coordinated system? And I think we believe that there is a sweet spot to be found there. That was our recommendation. But more work is going to have to go on to really find that sweet spot. And so a lot of that. So that work is going to be done over on the Senate side as well as here. The other major governance piece, and this one is going to start here in this committee, has to do with the governor's proposal for a new Department of Post-Secondary Education and Workforce Development, which would bring together the current CCWD, Community College Workforce Development, Oregon University System, you know, the universities, OSAC, the Student Access Commission, which does the opportunity grants and other scholarship kinds of programs, and then the Office of Degree Authorization. all of them brought together to create better communication, better articulation, and better support for the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission. So we had a lot of work to do, you know, with all of that, and we'll be starting right away. What we are going to do, and this kind of transitions into the remainder of today's session, is to, for the first 2 weeks, have a kind of have what we're calling Higher Ed 101. Right? We're going to devote some time to each hearing for an information hearing on some aspect of that post-secondary and workforce puzzle, just so that we have an understanding of what the status quo is before we move on. Okay, and we're going to start that in a couple of minutes. But before we do that, I just want to ask if committee members, is there, you know, of that laundry list that I read out to you, you know, are there other things that major areas that you think we're going to need to have information sessions on, or you know, other things that you know that are out there?
It was pretty inclusive.
Yeah. Something to emerge from those things.
Exhaustive.
Okay, great. Then before we move on to our first Higher Ed 101 class, I want to also first introduce our committee staffers, starting with our most able administrator, Victoria Cox, who has fought in the trenches with us. Victoria, anything you want to say?
Oh, just I'm happy to be here. I started here in 2009 as an session administrator for actually the Consumer Protection Committee, and then I did House Education in 2011, which was an experience. since then, during the interim, I was the administrator for the Committee on University Governance and the Higher Ed Committee. So I'm pleased to be continuing the work that we've started, and we're move it forward. Thank you.
Great, thanks, Victoria. Cassie, you want to tell us a little about yourself?
Hi, I'm Cassie. This is actually my first session, so I'm very excited to be here and be part of all the work that you will be doing for the next 6 months.
Okay, great, thank you. Okay, time for our first Higher Ed 101, and we're starting today with the community colleges. We will be hearing today just a kind of overview of the community colleges and the Community College Association, the Community College and Workforce Development Department, what they do, you know, what the mission of that piece of our post-secondary system is. And we're going to, on Wednesday, be hearing sort of a part two of that, focusing on a new report that's come out, which is, I forget what it's called, something about the 21st century. Maybe they'll say something about it today. Friday, we'll be hearing from OSAC, next Monday from the Office of Degree Authorization, and then next Friday from Oregon University System and the universities. So. And then the following week from the Workforce Investment Board. So, do I need to open the information here?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. All right, so for the record, I'm going to now open an information session, and this will be on community colleges and CCWD. And I'd like to call up Cam Preuss, our Commissioner of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, and Andrea Henderson, who is the Executive Director of the OCCA. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Well, good morning, and for the record, I am Cam Preuss. I am the Director of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development and Commissioner of Community Colleges.
And for the record, I'm Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association.
I don't know about the committee members, but I'm already exhausted listening to the list of things you're going to tackle, but I want to say that we are here to serve your interests and bring you the very best information we have on that list of issues, which is at least where it is appropriate. We're going to start this set of slides. I really don't like to project them because I'd rather that you were looking at us instead of off somewhere. So if you're wondering why you don't get an electronic projection, that would be why. And Andrea and I are going to just go back and forth. So hopefully what you get from this presentation is a real-life example of how the department and the association work together to support community colleges and workforce development across the state, rather than I'll run through my rap, she'll run through hers. That's really not, it's not how we work day to day, so it seemed reasonable that we would give you a sort of a view of our work together.
Cam, if I can interrupt you for a second. For those of you who are watching out there, you know, the millions who are watching us live streaming, I want you to know that through the wonders of our new information system, you can this information is already online for you, and you can look at it. Just go to the legislative front page and... I don't know how you do it exactly.
You click on the logo there that says OLIS, O-L-I-S, and you go to this committee, which is House Higher Ed. You click on the agenda for today, which is February 4th, and you will see a button that says Meeting Materials. If you open that up, this document is there.
And from inside, you get it from the internet the same way?
Yes.
So we're going to start with an overview of the mission of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. It was a merger of federal job training programs and community colleges back in 1999. So we have had a merged mission since that time. And the agency mission, which was crafted shortly thereafter, has really stood the test of time. It is all about leadership and resources to increase the skill and knowledge of individuals so they can have what I like to call resilience in the workplace, whether that's on-the-job training, whether that's a degree or a certificate, what they have helps carry them into work and beyond. Chair Dembro mentioned that we are going to be back on Wednesday. We're going to be talking about a document that was recently released by the American Association of Community Colleges, and it is called Rebuilding the American Dream. It takes a critical look at the state of community colleges across the nation, some 1,200 different institutions, and really charts a path to orient for the future rather than perhaps resting on the laurels of the past. So we look forward to that discussion. The department has a set of goals that we have organized under or with our legislatively approved key performance measures. And recognizing that there are a number of new members to this committee, I wanted to just provide that bit of background. So we're about increasing strong literacy skills. We're about making sure Oregon has a well-trained workforce, and that we do that by providing a wide range, but an appropriate range. So we're not training for jobs that do not exist, so that individuals can go to work, and that Oregonians have access to excellent and affordable community colleges. You'll see some of the very same issues that Chair Dembo was articulating earlier are listed here. Before we jump into how we are currently organized, slide number four is a picture of...
Mr. Chair, do you want questions as we go?
Do you mind, Cam?
Not at all.
Okay. Do you have a question?
Yeah. Commissioner, the program for the higher eds to, or like University of Oregon to give associate degrees, is that progressing? Is that working? I was told there was a program where Oregon was going to issue associate degrees for those people that dropped out or had six, you know.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wisnett, we do have a project that we are working on that's been funded by the Lumina Foundation, and it's called Reverse Transfer. And I think that might be what you're...
A lot of states have done that. They issued people that didn't finish the four-year program, they issued them a two-year associate degree.
That's correct, where a student has transferred to a university and they have not finished an associate's degree at the community college. We are currently piloting in several places around the state sort of a look back at what the student came to the university with and what they have now gained at the university, and does that accumulate to an associate degree.
Just a quick follow-up. So are you leading that effort, or is the Oregon University system leading that effort?
Mr. Dembro, or Chair Dembro and Representative Wisnett, it's a combined effort. We actually are the receivers of the grant funds, but we are in great partnership with the university system.
I don't see any, Mr. Chair, that should move forward. I don't see a big problem. It's quick and easy to get it done.
It is happening, right? And, you know, I know PCC and PSU are doing some.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, I actually think that OIT and Klamath Community College have been the first to award an associate degree to an individual who transferred from KCC to OIT. So it is on its way.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you for that question. So to slide four, which is the picture of the proposed governance changes for post-secondary education, it seemed like it would be important to just raise this to your attention. There is currently legislation that is being drafted that would make the left side of this slide a reality, at least the piece that covers the Department of Post-Secondary Education and its connection to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. What you will see on the right side is the delivery side, if you will, the education providers, and inclusive of that are the 17 community colleges. So I'm expecting that in the not-too-distant future you'll have a chance to look at the words that will describe this picture.
So with this next slide, I will talk a little bit about OCCA and then a little bit more detail about the community colleges and some of the services that we provide. You have in front of you a chart that essentially shows the governance system as it currently exists for community colleges. And in addition to the State Board of Education, who hires CAM and oversees the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, we also have what's called the Oregon Community College Association. We are a council of governments of the 17 community colleges, and I am governed by a 34-member board, which is the president of each college, and then each locally elected board elects one of their members to serve on my board as well. And we, as an association, work to have at all times a consensus opinion of the 17 community colleges, so that when you see a position from OCCA, it's something that has been talked about with all 17 colleges, and there's agreement and consensus, and we can bring forward that collective community college voice and opinion on issues. We have, as you know, 17 community colleges with locally elected boards. Each board has a 7-member board. And as community colleges, we really do focus on those local board members and their role in really setting policy and governing that community college. One of the roles that we have as an association, in addition to the advocacy work, is to help with that board member development, to be that place where board members can learn how to be better board members, learn about the issues that they need to be facing as board members, and how they might collaborate with other colleges and other board members in terms of making their role as board members that much more effective.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm trying to follow along. I think I'm on the same slide, securing governance. Which board are you talking about in this case?
So this would be the 17 locally elected boards.
Not the 34-member board that you...
Chair Dembro, Representative Greenlich, the 34-member board would be the OCCA board, which is the statewide board for the community colleges that represents all 17 colleges. Each college, as a college, belongs to OCCA.
Is that on this slide?
Yes, on slide five.
Yes. And, Andrea, this is an association. I mean, this is not a part of the state of Oregon, the OCCA board.
Right. Chair Dembro, it is a council of governments. So each college, as a college, belongs. It's we are a governmental entity. We are not associated with the state of Oregon. We are essentially a local government.
Kind of a coalition of the community colleges.
Yes.
Okay.
So if I could move on to the next slide.
A voluntary association.
But she said it's a local government. That's different than a voluntary association, right?
So, Chair Dembro, Representative Greenlich, it is a governmental entity. We are technically under ORS 190. We are a council of governments. So similar to other council of governments that exist in the state, we just happen to be one for community colleges. So it is more than an association. It is a governmental entity, but it is a separate governmental entity.
Let me just follow up, Andrea. So if a college decided it didn't want to be part of the OCCA anymore, could it?
Chair Dembro, yes, it could. By the bylaws of our organization, they can withdraw with 1 year's notice.
It's not in the silence, I think.
So if I could move on to the next slide, slide number six, which is a map of Oregon and the locations of our, not only our 17 community colleges, but almost all of our colleges also have satellite campuses. So you can really see the breadth of the coverage across the state. Statutorily, the community colleges are required to be within commuting distance of most Oregonians. And I think what you can see from the map, to the extent possible, that does occur. So that colleges don't just have one main campus, but have multiple satellite campuses, outreach centers, and a variety of ways that they offer services to Oregonians that live within their district. I mean, really the key for the community colleges is to be available for their communities for whatever that community needs. Our colleges have been around since about the early 1960s. We have some disagreement in terms of which is the earliest colleges. We have four colleges right now that do claim that they were the first community college in Oregon, and I won't get into deciding which one is which. We can let all four of them call that themselves the first. But certainly have throughout the years really focused on that comprehensive mission to provide services throughout their district to all their citizens.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you. Real quick, has any other been student problems financially or enrollments in all of our community colleges? Are they pretty, the recession, I guess they're pretty good shape as far as enrollment. Is that correct?
Chair Dembro, Representative. Our enrollment last year was the second highest enrollment ever, and certainly for all the community colleges, they have had record enrollment since 2007, and certainly are struggling with trying to accommodate the needs of their district while enrollment has increased.
Right, we're going to try to move briskly. Slide 7 is just a slide from our vantage points, tries to help make the connection between education and workforce development, always ensuring student success. And slide 8 then is a continuum that helps you all see how all the different programs and services that are provided either through the community colleges or workforce development entities across the state help really build the skills and help accomplish Oregon's educational attainment goals of 40-40-20 and community colleges really see themselves as, I might take a risk here and say that we're really responsible for the middle 40, for ensuring that individuals have the professional credentials or associate degree. Also, or community colleges feel as though they have a foot in both camps, both of the increasing the number of high school students who are able to gain credit while they are still in high school, college credit, that is, as well as the earlier conversation with Representative Wisnett about the transfer function. So community colleges have work that they do unto themselves, and they also are really required in order to achieve the 40-40-20 to be good partners and stewards for high schools and the universities.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Rep. Johnson.
Kim, I would just add another bullet, I think, to the three that we have on the right-hand side for the hoped-for outcomes. You have educated citizens, good jobs, livable communities, but I think you should add significantly decreased need for state services in that, too, with a highly educated population in Oregon. I think that's one of our ambitions as well. More self-sufficiency from a financial standpoint. Just a thought.
Great. Rep. Gallegos, Chair?
Kim, I'm just curious. I just have a question. From the community I grew up in, military service was a vehicle for getting educated, getting training, and so on. To what degree do we parallel, do we work with military veterans' education processes?
Chair Denbrough and Representative Gates, a lot. It's been a particular focus of the legislature for at least the last two sessions, if not the last three. The Veterans Committee of this body works tirelessly to ensure that veterans have not just adequate but sterling experiences in post-secondary education at community colleges and the university through tuition waivers and credit for prior learning. We're doing a lot of work to ensure that reintegration upon return from any of the areas where someone might be stationed is as seamless as possible.
Thank you.
So on slide number 9, I'm going to begin talking a little bit about funding of community colleges, and certainly recognize that the Ways and Means Committee will ultimately be deciding our budget, but did want to talk a little bit about how community colleges are funded. We essentially have what we call three legs to our funding as community colleges. We have the state support, which comes in the Community College Support Fund from the legislature. We have local property taxes, and we are under the $5 limit for education under Measure 5 with K-12 and ESDs. And then lastly, we have tuition. And on a later slide, I will show you how those percentages have changed over the years. Currently in the governor's budget, the funding for community colleges is $428. I would point out to you that in 2007, the legislature funded community colleges at $500 million. So we are still significantly under the 2007 levels and are the amount that was funded in the 2005 legislature. At the same time, our enrollment has increased quite dramatically in that same time period, which essentially has shifted a lot of the burden to paying for it to students, unfortunately. At the 428 level.
Excuse me, Andrea. Yes, sir, Rep. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Andrea, as we talk about cost drivers and so forth for higher ed, do you have any idea what the actual, for the 2011-13 biennium, what the impact of the PERS rate increase was in 2011 was for that biennium, as well as what potentially it is for projected to be for 13 for the community college system as a whole?
We have those numbers from OUS. I just wondered what it is for CCWD.
So, Chair General, Representative Johnson, we do have those numbers. I don't have them with me at the moment, but would be happy to get them to you. I do know that anecdotally the increase that we have in the governor's budget is very close to what it will cost to cover the PERS increase.
Thank you.
So, in terms of the 428, which is in the governor's budget, we think it's a good first step and certainly is a positive number rather than a negative number this session. However, the reality for our community colleges, for all of our colleges, they still have a deficit issue for this upcoming year, and we'll be looking at further cuts to their programs and also increases in tuition. It's really a question of what the mix is between that increase in tuition and the cuts. The request that the OCCA is putting forward for this upcoming legislative session is quite a bit higher, at $510 million. And the number we created by using a model that was developed to look specifically at the 40-40-20 and essentially ask the question, if we are to be on a trajectory to actually reach the 40-40-20, what would it take to actually get there in terms of number of students increased each year? And then from that, what would the increased cost be? And using that model, it's what generated the 510 number for us. We recognize that there just isn't the money available at the state level to get us to 510, but thought it was very important to have that number out there to show this is what it would take. And secondly, as we created that number, we also recognize that we need to do a better job in terms of the retention of our students and our completion rates. And so we would assume that we would increase those as well on a trajectory to 40-40-20. But that would be the funding piece of it that would be necessary.
Thanks, Andrea.
Rick Greenman.
Thank you. I'd like to clarify what may have been a stunning answer to Representative Johnson. Were you saying that the PERS increase will be in the neighborhood of $428 million? Or that there was enough money in the $428 million to cover the PERS increase?
Chair Denver, Representative Greenlick, the amount, to clarify, the amount of increase in the governor's budget, the difference between our current level of 395 and the budget, projected budget of 428, would come close to covering the PERS increase.
Oh, good.
But I will bring specific numbers back to you.
Thank you.
And then moving on to slide 10, this just gives you a brief overview of the comprehensive mission of community colleges. We served over 370,000 Oregonians last year, and our colleges do have what we call a comprehensive mission, which is to provide whatever educational services are needed to each individual community college district. The district boards set what those specific, what they look like at the local level, so they can be very responsive to local needs. But in addition to lower division transfer classes, we certainly have our career technical programs. We provide learning opportunities for K-12 students, adult literacy, English as a second language, developmental education, just a very comprehensive place for adults to go for additional learning. And if I could move on to slide number 11, which does talk about enrollment. And you can see our full-time equivalent measurement of enrollments. We were in 2010-2011 at an all-time high of 124,000. We did drop slightly last year, but it's still the second highest enrollment that we've ever had at community colleges. And certainly you can see the very sharp, dramatic increase from 2007 in our enrollments. Moving on to slide number 12. This shows you, of those full-time equivalent enrollments, where they are. So by far, the largest is in lower division transfer, which is 51% of those FTE, with the second largest being in our career technical, which is now at 26%. I would point out that historically, career technical has been much higher than 26%, but the career technical programs are far more expensive to offer than lower division collegiate work. And as we've had to make decisions over the last couple of years with our enrollment increases, it's shifted more to the lower division transfer because that's more, it's easier to offer those classes at a lower cost. Ideally, as we move towards reaching 40-40-20 and that middle 40, we will need to put additional resources into that career technical. It's where the jobs are, it's where people need training for jobs, but unfortunately they're very expensive to offer those courses.
Andrea, if I could just jump in, that it's also true that the students in those programs tend to graduate at a much higher rate, right? They tend to complete their certificates or degrees at a much higher rate than the general population.
Yes.
And this huge piece of the pie that's called lower division collegiate, what often we'll refer to loosely as transfer students. But in fact, a large number of those students are not really planning to transfer, right? Or some of those, they may only they may be seeking an associate's degree, or you know, their community college education may be their choice, their terminal choice.
Right. Chair Dembo, yes.
Yes.
I'm so.
Rep. Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are the courses that are lumped into career technical, are they at capacity, and there are people trying to get into them that cannot?
Chair Dembo, Representative Parker, yes. Across the state, they generally are at capacity. The programs are designed to meet the needs of the local business community, so they're really tailored to where the jobs are, and certainly there are waiting lists on multiple programs across the state of students that would like to have some sort of specific credentialing for a job that they can't necessarily get it.
May I?
Please.
Is the same true of the lower division collegiate courses?
Chair Dembo, Representative Parker, yes, but I would have to get some specific information. My guess is that it's not to the same extent. Certainly, our colleges tend to be very full. Students can't necessarily get all the courses they need. Certainly, in the lower division collegiate, the science courses tend to be very difficult to get into because they are a gateway course to so many different programs.
Thank you.
And then moving to slide number 13, as I mentioned earlier, the three-legged stool for community college funding, this shows you over the years how the percentage between those has changed. And I think the important piece to look at here in the most current year, tuition is now 45% of the cost of education. It's really shifted that burden to our students. You can see even as recently as in 2000, it was only 25% of the cost. And so the funding, the decrease in funding with our increase in enrollment has really led to one conclusion, which is to charge higher tuition, and it does mean that students are paying a much higher share of that cost. The state did reach a high of about 55% of the cost of education that it paid, but in the last decade has really really decreased, and we're now, the state's share is only 31%.
Yes, Rep. Parker.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just refresh my memory, please, and tell me when we passed Measure 5 in this state. Looking at the decline in contribution of property taxes.
Chair Dembo, Representative Parker, that would be in 1990 when the chart starts.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to move to a little more specific on slide 14 around career and technical education, just as a reminder of what kind of programs these are and what kind of jobs you can expect to get. These are the middle skill jobs. These are jobs that rarely will a community import workers for. So we like to think of these middle skill jobs as the grow your own, grow within the community, credentialed and certified individuals who can drive the fire truck and fight the fires, and electricians. This might be a great point to pause and talk about the department and the apprenticeship division of the Bureau of Labor and Industries. We do have a strong partnership. We have three statewide apprenticeship degrees that are offered at, I believe, six different institutions across the states. So they have partnered with their JATC at the local level, or in that local community, to ensure that apprentices can be both have both a journey card and an associate of science if that's what their interest is.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question?
Yes, Rep. Thurman.
Is that you also have those relationships with the union apprenticeship programs?
Chair Dembro and Representative Greenlick, absolutely. That's what I'm speaking of. They're both open shops and represented.
Thank you.
Slide 15, about 6 years ago, 7 years ago, the department embarked on a new way of delivering our associate degree programs, particularly those middle skill career and technical jobs. into something called career pathways. I don't know about you, but I remember something like this when actually I was in high school. There were pathways that were charted out for students. You could take this set of courses and over time build to a degree or a certificate. Well, what we have done in Oregon, and I with some pride say we are a national model of taking an associate of applied science degree, and my inelegant term is that we chunk it into smaller pieces, and that wherever that chunk happens to break is because the employer community has said, I don't need a whole associate's degree. I need whatever those specific sets of skills are for, let's say, a beginning or an entry-level office manager. I might not need a full business associate degree, but I need something, some sets of something. What we have done, we have over 200 career pathways across the state. All 17 colleges currently have them. It's open source documents, so any state can come and steal from us, and we encourage them to do that. There's no point in rebuilding the curriculum because it exists, and we have found it to be extremely useful for individuals who are trying to balance family, work, life, and school. Our whole point was to increase the number of certificates. This is definitely related to the middle 40 of the 40-40-20. We also intend to ensure many of these students haven't been to college for years and years, and they are unprepared and a little anxious about what that experience will be, so we also do our best to ease the transitions. We have more than 5,000 certificates that have been awarded since 2008, and you'll see their average wage is $15 an hour, which is very nice.
Karen, I have a question. So the goal of the career pathway is, you know, the student gets to a certain point, is recognized for that with a certificate, but is also encouraged to keep on that pathway and to stay in school while they're working. Is that correct?
Correct, Representative Dembo. Because they are in chunks, they are still fully articulated, and and we have success in students completing one step and then coming back and taking the next chunk, if you will, on the way to their associate's degree.
And can you tell us where we are right now in terms of 40-40-20 with that middle 40? You know, I know that, I mean, you had mentioned that the middle 40 are going to tend to be people who are going to graduate from Oregon high schools, you know, et cetera. I know the other 40, the 40 for the bachelor's, we have many of those who are migrating into Oregon. That's making our numbers look a little better in that level. So where are we in the middle level?
Chair Dembo, I would like to bring back more specific information to answer your question. But generally, the way in which we have parsed, if you will, the middle 40 is to look at 15% of the 40 would be 25% of the 40 would be us. Now I'm going to confuse myself. 15?
15 is associates.
Is associates, and 25 is certificates or professional credentials.
That's the goal.
That's the goal. So when we think about the middle 40, we think about it in two additive columns. We're at somewhere around 12% of the population, somewhere between 10 and 12% of Oregon's population has an associate's degree. So getting to 15 seems reasonable. We are really not even close when it comes to the 25% for credentials and professional certificates. We're continuing to gather that information. As I said, I lost the particular percentage this morning, but that is why the career pathways and why other work we are doing around credentialing, credit for prior learning, those efforts are to ensure that the knowledge and experience that individuals have and credits can be counted toward the middle 40. Another area of delivery for the community colleges is the development of basic literacy skills. We receive about $6 million from the U.S. Department of Education. This is a slide that shows you about what we can do with that resource. There are over 340,000 Oregonians who do not have a high school diploma. This is really a devastating number versus the number of individuals that we're able to serve with what's really a very small investment from the U.S. Department of Education. The department also takes the lead on the delivery of the GED, and you can see there that in 2012, the number who have completed the assessment and passed. There are currently five assessments that make up the GED. We'll probably be back to talk to you about how the GED is changing. We're going to have a whole new test in 2014, and it's going to be an online assessment right now. We're piloting online assessments, but it's a paper and pencil assessment. So more to change here on the GED. Talk a little bit about workforce development now, the blend that is CCWD. This slide on number 19, you're probably going to hear more about this when you invite the workforce board and others to participate. The department actually receives the Workforce Investment Act funds from the U.S. Department of Labor, and we distribute it to seven local workforce investment areas that make investments in workforce. But the Workforce Investment Board, the statewide board that both Representative Huffman and Representative Dembro are your representatives are, is staffed and housed in the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. The governor receives the money. The board helps make decisions at the state level. You'll see next is a workforce policy cabinet. These are the agency heads like myself, Laura Warner, Aaron Kelly Seal, from other departments meet together to ensure that there's alignment and leveraging of resources for delivery. The Workforce Board is a private sector-led board. It has, I think, 22 members today, and there has to be a business private sector majority. They finished a strategic plan this last July, and you'll see there the three major strategies that they are going to be working on into the future: industry sector strategies, certified work-ready communities, and systems, that's workforce systems innovation. Slide 21 is a map of how the workforce boards across the state are organized and what their geographic area is. There are primarily three pots of money that come from the Department of Labor to CCWD. These federal funds support adults, dislocated workers, and a dislocated worker is an individual who has lost their job through no fault of their own, primarily because of market forces. You might have heard about Freightliner last week. There have been any number of them in the news. The programs are really focused on increasing skill, increasing wage, and getting people back to work. Slide 23 is a picture that looks somewhat like the earlier slide for the community colleges. The feds are following suit, and our resources in this program have been going down. The blip you see in 2007 and 8, the $58 million, the $56 million was because of ARRA. The state received almost $40 million additional dollars over a couple of years for that effort.
Kim, I think I'm going to ask you to stop there for today.
Sure.
You'll be coming back, and just to give people some passing time to their next class.
Absolutely.
let me just ask you one last question about the Investment Act funding. with the possibility or prospect of federal budget cuts through the sequestration process, do you fear a reduction in further reduction in funding?
Yes. We have contingency plans in place for should sequestration pass. It's about 8 or 9% reduction. These are these particular programs are unusual for the feds. They are actually forward funded, so we actually know what our money is going to be, and that is that will help cushion the reduction. But the Department of Labor is fairly famous for what we call a clawback, so that if they have already released the funds, they will come and reduce our allocation if the budget isn't settled and sequestration actually happens. And that also includes that $6 million for adult basic skills funding as well.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Any last questions, members? Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We look forward to the presentation on Wednesday, which kind of takes it to the next level in terms of looking to the future.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, with that, I'm going to close this meeting of the Committee on Higher Education Workforce Development. Before I do that, I just want to thank all of you who've come out today. I see many students from community colleges, from universities, some who are living blended lives, combining community colleges and universities, and I really appreciate your coming and your interest in the work of this committee. So with that, I'll close this meeting.